Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he incorporates all the main topics of the Hindu scriptures in a beautiful logical flow. The most prominent spiritual confusions of our time are addressed and resolved one by one as the series makes its way towards the culminating topic of bhakti and the path of God realization.
Prathamam Sadgurum Vande Shri Krishnam Padamantaram. Guru Patatmana Trata Shri Krishna Vamanatmana Karavindena Padarinam Mukharinde Nileshayantam Vatasya Patrasya Puteshayanam Balam Mukundam Manasa Smarami Brahmanam Vidhati Purvam Yo Vai Vedanshcha Prainoti Tasmai Tadvamahadevamatma Buddhi Prakasham Mumukshuvai Sharanamaham Prapadye.
The Divine Souls, we'll have just a couple of minutes of Nam Sankirtan, and after that I'll begin with this series on the essence of Sanatan Dharma. So you can all sing along with me, Radhe Govinda.
Thank you.
Pandit Bihari Shri Raghavendra Sarkar Ki Jai. So, this is part one of a 15-part series on the essence of Sanatana Dharma. And this whole series is going to be the explanation of one mantra from our Vedas. Tameva vidittvati mrittimeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. This mantra says, only by knowing him can he cross it. There are three things mentioned in this mantra. The one who must be known, the one who must know him, and by knowing him, that which he must cross over. So three things. Something to be crossed over, something to be known, and the one who must know him in order to cross over. So those three things are God, Maya, and the soul. God is the one who must be known. Only by knowing him can a soul cross over Maya and cross over this ocean of cosmic existence and free himself from the cycle of birth and death. That is only possible through knowing God. So I just told you a very short explanation of that mantra. In fact, this whole 2-week pravachan is going to be an expanded explanation of this very mantra. So since the overall title for these 2 weeks is the essence of Sanatana Dharma, so let's use this mantra first of all to answer this question: what is Sanatana Dharma? The word Sanatan, as most of you know, means eternal. And it so happens that all three things mentioned in this mantra are also eternal. God is eternal, Maya is eternal, and the souls are eternal. It means God is not older than us. And God never created us. And God never even created Maya. This is the first thing to understand. Whatever exists has existed forever. So the first one, God, people are generally fairly quick to understand that, yes, of course, God must be eternal. If he wasn't eternal, it would mean someone would have had to create God, then that person who created God would have to be called Bhagwan, not Bhagwan himself. So, of course, Bhagwan is eternal. No one created him and no one can destroy him. So he is anadi anant. He never had any beginning and he will never have an end. But the other two, it takes a little bit of understanding. Someone might think, really? Just like God is eternal, souls are also eternal, Maya is also eternal. Yes, souls are also eternal. Another mantra from the Vedas says, Ajamekam lohita shukla krishnam vahvi praja srijamanam sarupa ajohyeko jushmano nichete jahatyenam bhutta bhogam ajunya. This mantra says all three things. They're called tattva. An eternally existing thing is referred to as a tattva. So all three are aj or aja. It means they never began. So all three things are eternal. God, the souls, and Maya. The souls were never created either, which means they're also eternal. So no new souls are ever being created, and no souls can ever be destroyed. So it means we're the same age as God. We've been here forever, just like he has. Veda says, Dhyagyo dva vaja vishani shavaja Yeka bhok tribhogyartha yukta anantashchatma vishvarupo
Yakartatrayam yadavindate brahmane tat.
All three things are eternal. God is eternal, the souls are eternal, and the third thing, Maya, is also eternal. Maya is the energy of this universe, which is also eternal. Although God is responsible for manifesting the universe, this will be a topic later in the week, so I won't go into too much detail right now, but although God does manifest the universe, but He doesn't create the universe out of nothing. So the thing, the upadan karan, you can say, the actual material or energy out of which the universe is made, is called Maya, or mul prakriti Maya. That is also eternal. God simply activates it and deactivates it. So Maya is eternal, the souls are eternal, and God is eternal. So since eternity, we've been taking birth after birth after birth. Now out of these three, it is the souls who have all the questions and all the problems. God is already perfect. He has no questions, He has no problems. He has been eternally perfect. Maya is a lifeless energy, so Maya can't have any feelings of any kind or any questions or even think anything. So Maya has no problems either. Whatever Maya is, it is. It may not be perfect, but Maya doesn't care. Maya is just a lifeless energy. So there's no question regarding Maya, there's no question regarding God. All the questions are because of the souls. Souls wonder, who am I? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? What is the meaning of my life? Do I have some aim? All of these questions are in the mind of every soul. So, it means that if the souls are eternal, these questions are also eternal. And if the questions are eternal, since God is kind, the answers must also be eternal. And they are. Those answers are in the Vedas. Someone might wonder, Vedas eternal? How can a book be eternal? A book cannot be eternal, but Ved is eternal. Nishvasitamasya Veda. Ved says that during Mahapralaya, when the whole universe is dissolved, during that time there's no souls living in the world. The world itself is not here. Just God is there. And all the souls are within God. Maya is within God. And Vedas are also within God. Not the books, the actual eternal form, divine form of the Vedas. So the book form is the bhautik roop, the material form we give to Vedas. But actually Ved has a divine form which is eternal and eternally resides within God. So during Mahapralaya, God exhaled nishvasitamasya Veda. And Vedas were manifested outwardly. Thus, Ved is called Paurusheya, means God is called Purush. So Paurusheya means from Purush, from God. So on one hand, Vedas were produced by God, but God never made them. He produced them, but He didn't make them. As they were before, in the previous Srishti, before Pralaya, there was another creation of the universe. During that time, Vedas were available. So those same Vedas which God had, just like everything else, Maya, the souls, they all came into God during Mahapralaya. Ved also came in and stayed inside God. So those same Vedas, God manifests outwardly. So on one hand, they are Paurusheya because He manifests them outwardly. On the other hand, they are called Apaurusheya because He didn't make them.
So they're not from God. On one hand they're from God, and on one hand they're not from God. Because he produces them outwardly, but he didn't create them out of nothing. They have existed since eternity. So just like God is eternal, Vedas are also eternal. So the answers are in the Vedas, and the Vedas are eternal, and God produces them externally, whenever Srishti is going to happen.
Kalena nashta pralaye vaniyam veda sangita adau brahmane prokta dharmo yasyam madatmakah.
In the Bhagavatam, Sri Krishna tells Uddhava that during pralaya, the Vedas disappeared into him, and of course all the books in their bhautic form, they're finished. But he says, when I'm going to do srishti, when I'm going to create the universe again, then I have to produce the Vedas also. So I give the knowledge of Ved to Brahma. Actually, this universe is unlimited in extent, in size. But in each Brahmand, means each planetary system, there's a personality called Brahma, who is one of the governors of that planetary system. So he looks after certain matters. And one of the matters which he is responsible for is helping to produce the scriptures of Sanatana Dharma, make them available in this world. So Krishna gives the knowledge of Vedas to Brahma. He gives Ved to Brahma. Actually, Ved comes out of Brahma's mouth. Krishna makes it come out. He's just saying Ved, Brahma is, without even realizing what he's saying. So Krishna gives Brahma the Vedas. Those Vedas originally have 100,000 mantras. And they are eternal. It means they are unchanged. Ved is always exactly the same. So that Ved is given to Brahma, and Brahma gives that Ved to the first rishis of our earth planet. Divine saints who inhabit the earth planet before any ordinary souls are born as human beings. There are several generations of saints as told in our Vedas and Puranas. This history of our earth planet is described. And all the sequence of who was born to whom millions of years ago. So those first rishis received the knowledge of Vedas from Brahma, and they pass it down orally from generation of saint to generation of saint. This is why Ved is also called Shruti. It means heard and remembered. Those saints with divine mind only had to hear the Ved one time. Imagine sitting and hearing 100,000 mantras and remembering them all, just like that. That's where Ved gets its name, Shruti. That's how it was passed down through those generations of saints. But eventually, when ordinary souls started to be given birth as human beings and ordinary population spread, it was necessary to have that knowledge of the Vedas in a book form so that ordinary people could also learn about it. Ordinary people like us cannot just hear the Ved and remember it. I recited so far for you 3 mantras of the Vedas. Can any of you recite them back to me? That's what I'm talking about. Imagine hearing 100,000 of them and remembering all of them. So we need it in a book form. So those munis and the rishis put that divine knowledge into a book form. But it's not the book itself that's eternal, it's the Ved which is eternal. So, just like before a baby is born, milk comes automatically in the breast of the mother, so that there's nourishment there ready as soon as the baby is born. In the same way, before ordinary souls even need the knowledge is made available. Because as soon as an ordinary soul is born, he's going to wonder, who am I? Is there a God? If there is a God, can I meet him? where am I? What is all this? What is this world? Where did it come from? What is it for? What's the goal of my life? All of those questions come. So before the soul can even ask those questions, God produces the Vedas in the world so that the knowledge is available. The answers are there. So this is why it is called Sanatan Dharma, because this knowledge is eternal. It was not produced out of the mind of any person, or even any saint, or even God Himself. It's an eternal knowledge which is made available in the world by God. But the thing about these Vedas is Anantaparam Gambhiram Durvigahyam Samudravat. The knowledge of the Vedas is so deep. Parokshavado Vedoyam. The language of the Vedas is so secretive, so difficult to understand, that even with a proper knowledge of Sanskrit and grammar and everything, a person cannot on their own fully understand the Vedas. In fact, even Brahma couldn't understand. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye Muhyantiya Surayam. In the Bhagavatam, Veda Vyasji says, Ved is coming out of Brahma's mouth. He's reciting Ved because Krishna's sitting in his heart giving him Vedas. So the mantras are coming out of his mouth and he has no idea what they mean. That's Brahma, with a divine mind who's so intelligent that he created our Brahmand out of space. In other words, out of nothing. That Brahma couldn't understand what he was saying when he recited the Vedas the first time. Krishna had to grace him. With Krishna's grace, Brahma was able to understand what the meaning of the Vedas are. Because Vedo Narayana Sakshat. Ved is not less than God. Whatever is God, same as Ved. Ved is Sakshat Bhagavan. So just like God is completely beyond anyone's intellect, no one can grasp God with their own limited intellect. So if you can't know God with your intellect, then you can't know Vedas either. So even though someone may think they could understand the words of the Vedas, the literal meaning might not be the same as the actual meaning. Like the word Atma sometimes is used for God, sometimes it's used for soul, sometimes it's even used for mind. So how are you going to know? In other words, what I'm saying is Vedas are impossible for an ordinary person to understand, yet they contain all the answers that we need. They're the eternal knowledge of Sanatan Dharma, which can answer all the questions that all the souls have. Yet we can't understand the Vedas. So God also makes other scriptures available. Itihasa Purana Abhyam Vedam Samupabhringhayet. The Vedas are made understandable through Itihasa Purana. Itihas means Ramayana, Mahabharata and Purana, you know, 18 Puranas including Bhagavatam. Through these other scriptures of Sanatan Dharma, a person is able to understand the meaning of Ved. So the same knowledge that's in Ved is again taught in these other scriptures, but in a different style, which is more understandable to an ordinary person. But there are many such scriptures actually. I'll tell you the main, most prominent scriptures of Sanatan Dharma, other than Vedas. So Ved includes, first of all, Upanishads. When I say Vedas, it means Upanishads also. Upanishad is not some other scripture, it's included in Ved. Ved has different branches. Each branch has three parts to it. So think of it like actually 1,130 branches of the Vedas originally. So 100,000 verses split up into sections called shakha, different branches. So each branch has a certain number of mantras. And each one of those branches is again divided into three. Mantra bhag, brahmana bhag, aranyak bhag. So the mantra bhag tells certain mantras that are meant to be used in Vedic rituals. Brahmana bhag tells how to use those mantras and in what ritual. So that's all karmakanda for going to swar. We'll talk about that later in the week as well. But the aranyak bhag answers those questions that I told you about. Those questions that have to do with who we are, who is God, what is the meaning of our life. So at the end of each branch, each of the 1130 branches of the Vedas, there's a section which deals with that spiritual knowledge of God. So that section, that Aranyak Bhag, is also called Upanishad. So there's one Upanishad for each branch of the Vedas. So originally there are 1130 Upanishads. Today there's only 202 available. But that's also enough for us. There's enough knowledge in those 202 Upanishads to understand what we need to answer those basic questions that we have. Now, other than Ved, which includes Upanishads, I'll just quickly give you like a grand tour of the other scriptures of Hinduism. An affiliate of the Vedas are the Vedangas. There are six Vedangas. One is Nirukt. Nirukt is actually a dictionary of Vedic words. There's a special separate dictionary, Sanskrit dictionary, just to understand the meaning of Vedic terms. That's Nirukt. Then you have Vyakaran. That's the grammar of the Vedas, how to understand how the mantras are put together. Then you have Chand. Chand tells the different meters, length and meters of the different mantras. Shiksha tells how to pronounce each mantra. Just like, you know, should your tongue be having contact with your, should your lips be together? Should the tongue be on the teeth? Should it be on the palate? Should it be the back of the tongue touching almost back in the throat? What part? Where's the contact point? Then where's the emphasis? Do you aspirate it with a ha or not? All of this is taught in Shiksha, how to do the proper pronunciation. Then we also have Jyotish. Jyotish explains how to, this is also just for Karmakand, to know the proper time to perform certain rituals, which are going to be part of a good action that someone is doing. So, learning to calculate where the different constellations and planets are going to be at what time, and then according to that, when is the auspicious time to undertake something. This is also part of our Vedangas. And then we also have the Kalpa Sutras, that's the sixth Vedanga, which is like a concise explanation of all the Karmakanda of the Vedas. So this is Vedanga. Then we have Upaved. There, the Upaved, which is affiliated with the Rigved, is called Arthaved. This is the science of economics and sociology. The Upaved associated with Yajurved is Dhanurved. This is the science of warfare and defense. The Upaved associated with Samved is Gandharvaved. This is actually how classical music and dance was introduced to this world, Gandharva Ved. And the Upaved affiliated with Atharva Ved is the only one which is available today, that is Ayurveda. So these four Upavedas relate to Bhautik Vad, to living in this world and all the knowledge we need to be able to live physically in the world. So we covered Ved and Upanishad, six Vedangas, four Upavedas. Now come to Darshan Shastras. There are 6 Darshan Shastras. They are all explanation, further explanation of what's in Ved and Upanishad. And all 6 have to be understood in order to understand what's in Vedas. So the first one is Purva Mimansa. That only relates to good actions, rituals, karma kand, and how to get to Swarga. Then you have Sankhya Darshan. That tells about the Srishti. How does this universe come into being? Then you have Yoga Darshan. Yoga tells about how to control your mind. Then you have Nyaya and Vaisheshik, that tells the logic of how to understand all the things that are taught in the scriptures, like why is God a fact, where is true happiness, all of these things, the logical part is taught in Nyaya and Vaisheshik. And then the topmost out of the 6 Darshan Shastras is the Uttar Mimansa or Brahma Sutra. It is also called Sharirik Bhashya. And it is also called the Vedant Sutra. Most of you have heard this word, Vedant. So all 6 of these are all in sutra form, codified sentences, and they're all explaining different parts or with a different emphasis on the Vedas. In addition to this, we have Smritis. Smritis are many in number. They are all written by different saints. Nowadays we have 42 available. Out of those, Yajnavalkya Smriti and Manu Smriti are most prominent. But for Kaliyuga, only Parashar Smriti is applicable. It has the easiest and simplest rules to follow, because all of these Smritis are like social law books. How to live in the society, how to live in the family. So they just explain again further about the karma kanda of Vedas. In addition to this, we have 18 Puranas. Originally those 18 Puranas had 1 billion shlokas. Actually it was one Puran, 1 billion shlokas. That was also given to Brahma in the beginning. Prathamam sarva-shastranam puranam brahmana smrita. Bhagavatam says, Vedavyasji says, that even before Krishna gave the knowledge of Vedas to Brahma, he gave him the knowledge of Puran, because only with the knowledge of Puranas can Ved be correctly understood. So, sarva-pratham, he gave the knowledge of Puranas. But for Kaliyuga, Vedavyas presents or makes available a concise version of that huge Puran in 18 different Puranas and only 4 lakh shlokas, 400,000 shlokas instead of 1 billion. So Puranas are also a part of this system. Out of those 18 Puranas, the Bhagavatam is the Mahapurana, the most important. In addition to that, we have 2 Itihas. The Mahabharat, which is 100,000 verses, and the Ramayana, written by Valmiki, which is about 24,000 shlokas. So these also help to explain the correct meaning of the Vedas. All of these scriptures are also eternal. Not only Vedas are eternal. All of these scriptures, I just gave you the quick grand tour, but all of them are eternal. In fact, they're all divine and they all have a divine form. It is told in the Bhagavat Mahatmya that in 2842 BC, when Sanakadik Paramahans recited the Bhagavatam to Naradji in a great gathering of divine personalities, there in that gathering, it's described that some very interesting divine personalities came to hear the recitation of the Bhagavatam. Among them were all the divine rivers of India, like Gangaji, Yamunaji. They didn't flow in there like water. They have a divine form like a goddess. So they came in their divine form to listen. Also, the other 17 Puranas, the 16 Darshan Shastras, the Vedas, and Gita also came in their divine form to hear the recitation of Bhagavatam. So in fact, all of these scriptures have a divine form and they all reside in Vaikunth abode, the divine abode of God. And during Srishti, they stay in Brahma's abode, here in this Brahmand, but they're made available in book form on the earth planet. But all these other scriptures are called Smrit Granth, whereas Ved is called Vinirgat Granth. Vinirgat means never made, never created out of anyone's mind, eternally existing in the same state. Now all these other scriptures are also eternal, but they're actually written in the words of that saint who writes it. So it's an eternal knowledge, but the saint, he experiences God, and then in his own words, he produces that scripture. So some of the wordings may change over time, meaning each time it's reproduced, the wordings may change. The knowledge or the philosophy would not change, but some of the wordings may change. So they're called Smrit Granth, but Ved is Vinirgat Granth, because it's unchanged, unchangeable. So Ved is the basis for all of the knowledge of Sanatana Dharma. All the other scriptures, they're only explaining what is in Ved, and they have to be in coordination with Ved. No scripture makes up something that is not already in Ved. No scripture tells any new thing which is not already told in Ved. It's all presented already in Vedas, but those scriptures take maybe a part of Ved and expand on that in more detail. So all of these scriptures are part of a great system of education that we call Sanatana Dharma or Hinduism. Like a multi-tiered educational system which is fully coordinated. And all of them together provide the knowledge of Sanatana Dharma, but Ved is the basis. So this Sanatana Dharma, I told you, taking this knowledge of that first mantra, we're going to understand what is Sanatana Dharma. So what is Sanatana Dharma? First of all, Sanatana means eternal. So it's based on the eternal knowledge of the Vedas and the other scriptures. And Dharma means Abhyudaya Nishrayasa Siddhi Sadharma. That which gives you well-being in this life and also ultimate happiness. Those actions, thoughts and practices that if you follow them, they give you well-being in this life, prosperity in this life, and ultimate happiness, divine happiness, Shreya. So one is Abhyudaya, that means well-being in this life. And the other, Nishrayas, or Shreya, that means perfect divine happiness. Dharma is the path that should give you both of those things. So Sanatana Dharma relates to both. It's actually divided into two. Apara Dharma is related to what you have to do to gain well-being in this life. It's like a physical dharma. And Para Dharma is the supreme dharma that is the path to God, how to get perfect happiness. Rohit, just leave the door open. So, what is Sanatana Dharma? It is the eternal path to God, which also includes teachings for how to live your life in the world. So our Vedas are said to be like a Kalpa Vriksh, which you could say in our modern terms nowadays, you could say like Walmart. You can get anything there. You don't have to go anywhere else. Our Sanatana Dharma has something for everybody. That's why I said it's like a multi-tiered educational system. Everybody, no matter where they are in their mental development, meaning whether they're desiring God strongly, whether they're just starting to think about God, whether they have no desire for God and they just want to enjoy this world, even whether they're an evil person, there is something for everybody in Hinduism. Our Vedas tell, if you do these bad actions, you're going to suffer in Narak, or you'll suffer this kind of punishment in your next life. If you want to enjoy in your next life, or you even want to go to Swarg, then do these things. Then they go beyond that, and they tell, well, if you want to go beyond the enjoyment of this world, and beyond the suffering of this world, then you have to do this. And if you want to attain eternal divine bliss of God, you have to do this. All of these different things are made available through our Vedas. So Sanatana Dharma answers all the questions completely and shows the path to attain everything, whatever you want. You want to go to Narak? Okay, do these bad things. You want to be reborn here? Okay, do these things. You want to go to Swarg? Do these things. You want to go to God? Do these things. Everything is told in our scriptures. So there are many paths described in our scriptures depending on what a person wants to attain. Not all paths lead to the same place. In fact, every path will take you somewhere different. So this week we're going to understand, in fact in these 2 weeks, we're going to understand all of this in more detail. But there's one more thing that I wanted to bring up with you today. I told you that all of this knowledge is based on our scriptures of Sanatana Dharma. The Nirgat scriptures, Smrit scriptures, but not Krit scriptures. Krit means produced out of the mind of a material being. All of these scriptures are produced by divine people, beings with divine mind. So God-realized saints or God Himself. They're not ordinary scriptures. They're not ordinary books. It's not like a speculation that someone wrote down. Oh, maybe God might be like this. Whatever is written in all of those scriptures was written after experiencing God. Apashyat purukham purvam mayancha yadahai mayancha yadapashrayam. Bhagavatam. Before writing Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa did bhakti to Krishna and got his divine vision and also got the vision of Maya. And after that he wrote about Krishna in the Bhagavatam. So all of these scriptures are in fact produced out of the divine mind of saints or Vedas, which are eternally in the same form and are also divine. They're not Krit Granth, which would be like if I tried to write a book about God. Since I'm not God realized, that would be a Krit Granth, and it would have zero value. If I've not experienced God, how can I write a book about God? It's of no use. But there are thousands of such books available in the world today by unqualified people who write their ideas about God. These are all Krit Granth, they're not eternal, and nor are they manya. They're of no use. They're of no value for a person who's really desiring God. So our scriptures of Sanatana Dharma are either Smrit Granth or Vinirgat Granth. But someone may ask, okay, Swami Nikhilanand, you're telling me that these scriptures are divine scriptures, but if I have faith in them, is that just a blind faith? Why should I have faith in the scriptures of Sanatana Dharma? Is it just a blind faith? When you've never seen God with your own eyes, and these scriptures are telling you God exists, and I'm telling you these are divine scriptures written by those who have seen God, but you have no direct evidence for yourself, is that a blind faith? And if that's blind faith, is that Is that what we're supposed to do? Have blind faith in things? So the answer to this can be understood by looking at the way science works in the world. Scientists like to say proudly, no, we don't operate on faith, we operate on logic. And I don't believe anything unless I have proof. In fact, this is not true. Every scientist both has faith and proof, but in the beginning he doesn't have proof. Let me explain how. Let's say there's a boy in science class, maybe in fifth grade, a boy or a girl, learning about science. So if everything is teaching him about science, maybe he's learning about atoms and how different atoms are put together to form molecules, and then those molecules form the substances of the world we see around us. So if that boy keeps questioning every single little thing his teacher is telling him, Sir, this, you're telling me about atoms, and atoms get put together in different ways to form molecules, or combined in different ways to form different molecules. I've never seen an atom. I've never seen a molecule. How do I know you're not just making this up? Why should I have blind faith in what you're telling me? So, actually, you do have to have faith in the beginning. The teacher will tell him, just stop. You can't ask questions like that every minute of the day. First of all, just accept what I'm telling you. Learn this knowledge I'm giving you. And based on that, when you become a great scientist, you can do experiments for yourself and you can actually see these things I'm telling you about. But in the beginning, you take it on faith. You have faith in the great scientists who have discovered those things, written them down in books. They've said, I have seen these things. I have the pratyaksh praman. Pratyaksh praman means I saw it, so I believe in it. I know it to be true. Eyewitness proof. Those are great scientists, so they've proven those things. They've had the direct proof of those things existing. But we haven't. And a little boy who's studying science hasn't, yet he still takes it on faith. Okay, they're the experts, they're telling me it is so, so I'll believe them because I also want to become a great scientist. So when I get older, when I get to that level, then I'll get to see what they have seen. In the same way saints tell us, and the scriptures tell us, you can't see God right now, you can't get pratyaksh praman of God's existence. That comes later. You have to qualify, you have to get to that level to see God, meet Him face to face. Then you will have your own experience of everything that's told in the scriptures. You'll see for yourself. You'll experience it. Right now it's words that you're taking on faith. Yes. But blind faith would be if a scientist said, this thing exists, believe me because I saw it and I'm saying it, but you can never see it for yourself. Just believe me. That's blind faith. But science doesn't say that. Science is based on reproducible results. The scientist says, I did this experiment and I proved the existence of this thing. Another scientist of my ability can also perform the same experiment and prove the existence, reprove it. He can experience it for himself. Reproducible results. That's not blind faith. You take it on faith in the beginning as a starting point. Faith is a starting point, but that faith has to be able to lead to experience, your own direct experience of that thing. Saints and scriptures say the same thing. They're not just saying, believe in God because I'm telling you, but you'll never get to see for yourself. That would be blind faith. Believe in reincarnation because I'm telling you, but you'll never get to see the reality for yourself. Believe in swarg and narak because I'm telling you, but you'll never get to see for yourself. Believe in God's divine abode because I'm telling you, but you'll never get to see for yourself. That would be blind faith. There's no such thing in Hinduism. It's all intelligent faith. The same way a scientist has faith in those great scientists who went before him, then when he gets to their level, he can perform those experiments and have the same experience they had. In the same way, our saints and scriptures lay out a path and say, this is the goal. That thing you're going to get in the end, you can't see it right now. You have to take it on faith. But if you do this, you're going to get there. Then you'll be able to see for yourself. And thousands and millions of saints have done that, and they have said, yes, I followed this path, and I saw that thing. In other words, I attained God. So the saints keep reaffirming, yes, this is correct, yes, this is correct, and we can also follow the same path and get the same results. So it's not a blind faith, it's an intelligent faith, and it works the same way science works. It's no different than that. If someone wants to say, but oh, what if it's some kind of conspiracy? People just made up some idea about God and reincarnation and this and that, and you know, a bunch of Mahatmas got together, Babaji's got together and said, let's come up with some story like this, and people will start believing it. Or the story evolved over time and people believed in it. No, it's not like that. Or if you believe it's like that, then prove it. See, let's say someone says, I've never been to China. I don't think China exists. It's a conspiracy. People have conspired to make the whole world believe that China is some country, and there's a billion people living over there in China. I don't think there's really a China. They wrote it in books, humko bevkoof banane ke liye. So, if someone starts talking like that, those who have been to China, first of all, are going to, you know, smile in amusement at that person. Ye kitna bhola hai. He thinks it's a big conspiracy. I've seen China with my own eyes. I know it's real. So, the only thing he could suggest to him would be, why don't you get on a plane or get on a boat or whatever way you want to go to get there, but go where China is supposed to be and see for yourself. If it's not there, when you get to that spot it's supposed to be and it's not there, then you can tell the whole world, oh no, no, all you people who are believing in China, you're fools. It's a big conspiracy. China doesn't exist. In the same way, saints smile at us when we think in our tiny little intellects that, really? No, I don't think there could be a God. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me in my little material intellect. Divine God doesn't fit into my little intellect, so it doesn't make sense. I don't believe in God. So the saints who have seen God, who are practically seeing God, when they hear a soul talk like this, they can only smile and think, ye kitna bhola hai. But they try to show the path. They say, really? Why don't you prove it? Why don't you follow the path to God, which is described in the scriptures, and then if you do that and there's no God at the end of your path, then you can say, it's all wrong. But every soul who's ever followed that path has got the divine vision of God, gotten the pratyaksh praman. So, we start with shabda praman. Shabda praman means someone else said it, and I'm taking their word for it. Because I don't have the experience of that thing directly yet. So first we have faith in the words of the experts. That's shabda praman. Then using that as a basis, we practice and we progress, and in the end we get our own pratyaksh praman. We will meet God face to face. So all of our scriptures of Sanatana Dharma are here for this purpose, to show us the path. That's what dharma is. Dharma means how to find God, and in the process also how to live in the world, so that the world can be a harmonious and peaceful place. So in this series, we're going to be using these scriptures of Sanatana Dharma as our basis. We're going to be taking that Shabda Praman and answering all of our questions that we have about our existence and about God and all of the spiritual questions based on Veda and all the other scriptures of Sanatana Dharma. That's why this series is called The Essence of Sanatana Dharma. But these scriptures are so numerous, there's so many in number, and even if someone could find the time in one lifetime to read and study all of them, Shruti Purana Bahu Kahe Upai Chutana Adhika Adhika Arujhai. Tulsidas ji says, if someone tries to study all of those scriptures, he's going to end up with a big mess in his mind, a big knot of confusion. Why? Because there are so many apparent contradictions in the scriptures. I told you it's a vast ocean of knowledge. Even though it's all coordinated, it's a multi-tiered educational system, how do you know what part of the system you're in? And what part of it is for you? And this part relates to that kind of person, and this part is for this. There's no way for a person with a material intellect to be able to reconcile and understand all of that in the big picture. Therefore, what I'm going to do in this series is take what I've learned from my Guruji, Jagat Guru Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, who is the only original Jagat Guru living in the world today, and actually only the fifth original Jagat Guru in the last 5,000 years. So, what I've learned from him about Vedas, Gita, Ramayana, Puranas, all of these main scriptures, based on that, I'm going to give you the essence of all of those scriptures in now the next 14 days. Today was the first day. We have 14 more days. So in those 14 days, we're going to cover all of the most important questions of a person's existence and see how they are answered by our Vedas and answered by our scriptures of Sanatana Dharma. So tomorrow, the topic I'm going to take up is this, that this mantra that we're starting with, Tameva vidittvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. Only by crossing over it can a soul know God. Only by knowing God can a soul cross over maya, cross over mrityu, cross over death. So it means a soul must know God. We have to find a way to know God. But what I'm going to tell you tomorrow, what I'm going to prove to you, is that all the souls not only know God, they accept God, and they have ananya prem for God. They love God and only God. Lokena hi sa vidyeta yo na rama manuvratah. Valmiki Ramayana says, there never has been, nor is there, nor will there ever be a soul who did not wholeheartedly love God and only God and nothing else but God. In other words, every soul in existence is astic, believes in God perfectly. And even if he tried for millions of years, even for one second, he could not become Gnostic. It means no one can stop believing in God, even for a fraction of a second. Now you might say, I don't know, this doesn't sound like it makes much sense to me, because I've met so many people in my own life. In fact, some of you may have people in your own family, in your own house, who say, I don't believe in God. So, Swami Nikhilanand, what you're saying doesn't seem to make much sense to me. So it means there must be some deep philosophy behind that, and I'm going to share that philosophy with you tomorrow, and in the process I'm going to prove to you that every soul always believes in God and can never stop believing in God. So we'll finish now with a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan, and then we'll have the Aarti. Ji.
today after 9 o'clock.
Well, in that case, we'll do a longer kirtan. One other thing about this series is that I'm going to keep presenting questions or problems like this that seem to have no solution. And then we'll resolve it. And then there will be another question and another solution and another question, and it will build. It's a progression of logic throughout the week. So what I'm trying to say is try to come every day, because if you miss a day, you'll miss what I said the previous day. And then when you show up, I'll be continuing to go forward from there, so it might be a little bit confusing unless you... It's understandable if you can't commit to come every single day, but you'll get more benefit if you come every day. And also if you come on time, because you don't want to miss, you know, I launch into it right on time, and if you miss the beginning of the speech, you might not be able to understand everything that I'm explaining. So we're going to sing one kirtan, which is actually written by Kripaluji Maharaj, my Guruji. And this is a kirtan describing the relationship between Krishna and his Gwalbal friends, who are also eternal saints, and how sweet and loving that relationship is, and how Krishna, when he's with his Gwalbal friends, he doesn't even act like God. He acts like an ordinary little boy, which makes those leelas even sweeter. So the words are a little bit not exactly simple, but I'm sure you'll be able to follow along. Thank you.
Oh, Rama, 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 R Thank you. Thank you. Where are the
कृष्ण कन्हैया लाल की जय।